Welcome to Recovery Stories Yukon. The purpose of this podcast is to break stigmas, bring hope, and show that recovery is possible within our communities. Heidi will be sharing her story today. She is 49 years old, lives in Beaver Creek, and is over 20 years sober.
Hey, how are you doing today?
I'm good, thank you.
Thank you so much for being here. Do you remember when you had your first drink, and do you remember how it made you feel?
I'm not sure if it was exactly my first drink or not, but I do remember the first night that I drank and got drunk. And I was about 11 or 12, I think, and with some friends. And I just remember as the evening went on that I felt more and more comfortable, and, you know, I felt funnier and just way more relaxed in being with the group of people that I was with. Yeah.
How did it progress from there? Was it you started wanting to drink anytime that you possibly could, or was it just kind of a once in a while sort of thing?
From there, it was as often as I could as a teenager, right? Like, or as a preteen, I guess. So it wasn't every day, but it was definitely at any time on the weekends when I could get together with friends, and when I could, because I obviously had to hide it from my parents. So it had to be away from the home and stuff, but it definitely was as often as possible.
What was your home life like? Did your parents drink, or your other extended family?
We didn't have any extended family around, really, because we were up north in the NWT. Neither of my parents drink and are quite religious. We were raised quite religious. So that addiction was never in our home. It was around us, like saw it in other families. And maybe, I guess, a bit in ours when we would go south to visit our family in Ontario in the summers. There we definitely had at least one, maybe a couple more family members that we saw that addiction in, but we didn't see it all the time in our own family, but in other families we definitely did.
Was that talked about a lot in your family when you were young, about the dangers of alcohol or addiction?
Yeah, interesting. So I grew up in Fort McPherson, NWT, and there was definitely a lot of alcohol addiction in the community. So it was talked about in the community about how it was, people were using it in the community. And I was aware from a really young age that about residential school, and that the alcohol use of people around me was due to that, like that's the suffering from that. But in our own, so that was it almost felt, I guess, reflecting on it, like a separate understanding of what, like there was lots of compassion and understanding from my parents around that. And then in our house, because nobody drank in our house, it was like, you don't do it because it's like against the religion. And the reason that it's against the religion, they're Mormon, is that it's not good for your body, and they're, one of the things is that you treat your body like a temple, like that you shouldn't ingest things that are bad for you, and that alcohol is bad for you, is what I remember the most. But it was two very separate things. Like, we just don't do it, and the people who do it, who are around us, are suffering.
It must have been a huge shock for your parents when they found out you were drinking then.
Yeah, they never understood the disconnect of how unworthy I felt, or how, you know, it's social anxiety, but it stemmed from a place of being unworthy of, and not fitting in a place where I was one of the only white kids in the community. And I didn't start drinking until we moved to the next community, but in Inuvik. But it was, I think that started that, because people expressed such hate for my way, you know, who I was, just the color of my skin, started to believe that I was not worthy. And of course, that's not, you know, that was coming from them, from all the pain that had happened in the past because of religion and white people who caused incredible pain and suffering. So even though I understood what had happened, or I knew what had happened, I don't think I understood as to why. As a kid, I didn't really get that, right? Like that it was being taken out on me. So I felt really shameful about that. And when I drank, then that all went away. And I don't think my parents knew that that's what was happening for me, that I felt that.
Did you feel a lot of backlash in that community because your parents were religious in regards to residential school?
Yeah, I think, you know, my parents, we lived there for a while and there were lots of really welcoming and kind people. And my parents were really forward-thinking educators and did things in a good way. And they were coming in on the heels of decades of that not happening in a good way and some severe abuse and horrible things happening. So my parents were in education, white, and religious. So it was, you know, like represented all of the things that caused so much pain and suffering. And there were also, like I say, there were also, so I think that that was there, but, and people were very gracious and kind and showed us teachings and traditional teachings and culture and stuff as well. So both the, you know, both things were true.
How did your drinking escalate from when you were living in Northwest Territories and being a kid to how did the progression move along?
So when my parents first found out how much I was drinking and I was using drugs, that they sent me to a foster home that was run by their friends. So I wasn't in the system, but I was sent away to live with another family for 2 years. And I think they're like the geographical cure that they were hoping that by me being somewhere different away from, you know, the friends who were drinking and all that sort of thing, that that would change. And it did not. The drugs lessened quite a bit because the people that I hung out with in Fort Smith, where I went, didn't use drugs as much. So, and it was mostly drinking, but I drank just as much, if not more, than when I was in Inuvik. And then through the years, it sort of ebbed and flowed, I think. And I was never a daily drinker. I was a binge drinker. Yeah. So I would drink a lot and then I wouldn't for a couple days. And then I would for a few days, you know. And I think there were moments in time where I really tried to, like, quote unquote, keep it together and not drink as much and would get a bit of traction of not drinking. But it was never with the intention of, like, not drinking. Like, that was not, I would say, like, okay, I'm not going to drink for a week. I just would try and do healthier things because I never saw it as I have a drinking problem. I always thought like my life is so crazy that I want to drink and I need to drink so that I can relax, that I can forget, that I, you know, all of those things. Yeah. So it ebbed and flowed.
How old were you when you moved away from the Northwest Territories?
I was, so my family moved to Ontario when I was 15. So I lived in Fort Smith away from my family for 2 years and then we all moved to Ontario. And I moved out again shortly after that because I hadn't lived at home for just over 2 years. And going back home and having parents try and parent you, I thought, well, I haven't needed you for years. I certainly don't need you now. So I moved out fairly quick soon after that.
Were your parents really stressed out that you were not living there, that they couldn't keep an eye on you? Or were they... did they understand how deep into it you were, that you were drinking that much?
I definitely hid it from them as much as possible. I don't think they ever knew to the full extent. Cause even when I sobered up, they were a bit surprised. Like, mm-hmm. Oh, I didn't realize you were drinking to the extent that you needed that kind of support.
When did you realize that drinking was becoming an issue for you? And what were the consequences that started happening?
You know, it's interesting thinking about that. So when I first went into AA, it wasn't until I started going to meetings that I realized that alcohol was the issue. Mm-hmm. I just wanted crazy stuff to stop happening. that I did not want to stop drinking. I just wanted crazy stuff to stop happening. So the things that were happening that were making it more evident at that time were I'd lost my license and I was in the midst of my job. My boss was trying to be really kind and compassionate but was basically saying like, I can't support you in this position anymore. I had been pregnant and had a partial molar pregnancy, which may or may not have been caused from drinking. I'm not sure. But so there was all these things that sort of were negative things that were happening. So I really wanted those things to stop. But and then once I started to talk to people who had stopped drinking, then I started to realize, oh, maybe it's the alcohol. Maybe it's not just life that's crazy, you know, and my partner and I were fighting really quite badly and like physically fighting sometimes. And it was just nuts all the time. And that's what I wanted to stop happening.
Was there a rock bottom moment that propelled you to that meeting?
It was just, I was saying all these things to a friend. I was working at a gym and I was telling him my story. And he said, maybe you should come with me. And we went to a meeting. And I thought, well, this is fine, but this isn't really for me. Like I thought the people were really annoying. I thought that, like, I thought everybody was full of crap. Like they all were like, oh, hi, welcome. We're so glad you're here. And I thought, I'm not glad I'm here. Like this looks terrible. But I was kind of out of options. Like I didn't want to be feeling the way I was feeling, but I didn't know how to do or feel any different way. So, and I really, this person who was taking me, he was a friend of mine and he was a guy who never hit on me. He was just always an actual true friend. So I liked hanging out with him. So I went with him and went with him long enough that I started to hear some of the things that were being said at the meetings and realizing like, oh, this might actually apply to me in my life. Yeah.
When you went to your first meeting, was it a lot of stops and starts after that, or did you just stick it out right after your first meeting? You never went back?
Not the first meeting, but within the, like, I'd say within a couple of weeks going to AA, I went to NA because drugs were also a part of my story, and I found the AA, I fit better with what was the people and what was happening in the AA meetings as opposed to NA. So I remember one night I was either going to go to an NA meeting or I was going to go home, and I decided to go home and I got drunk. And I remember being drunk thinking, this sucks now. Like I can't even do this anymore for the relief. And from that, the next day I went to an AA meeting, gave them my, said today is my sober date. And then I have to this date that I have been lucky enough not to drink again since then.
When you went home that night and after the meeting and you were drinking, what do you remember what was running through your mind? Like how it got ruined for you?
I just would hear, like, I think I heard some of the things that were said, like, that I was looking when I was drinking before, it was always looking for that ease, that comfort and ease. And I couldn't, even though it kind of was there, I couldn't feel it because I could hear that, like, this wasn't the way to do that. And it's going to just continuously perpetuate into life that is worse and worse. And that I knew that that's what was happening for me and could see it a bit more clearly now than I could before. Before I thought it was just like, all these shitty things are happening. And then when I went to AA and realized like, oh, if you stop drinking, then those things might stop happening.
When you started going to the meetings all the time, did your perception of the people change quite quickly?
It took a little while. And there were definitely some people that I connected to quicker. I mean, some people I didn't connect to at all, right? And that's a group of people together. That's what's going to happen. But it definitely had when I first started going to meetings, they say, don't get in a relationship. So that's the first thing that I did is I got in a relationship and continued to go to meetings, which was good because it made me continue to go to meetings. I'm not sure I would have if I wasn't doing that. And very quickly, within a month, I was realizing that that was a very unhealthy relationship and got out of that. But I had been going to meetings long enough to realize that I wanted to stick around, and I wanted, because life was starting to get very small incrementally better, but it was. And I made some really close connections with people so that it wasn't just connecting for that 1 hour during a meeting, but it was also connecting outside of those meetings and with people showing me like how things I could do and what life could be like. And I also got a sponsor. So it was a lot of talking about recovery pretty much 24/7 because I wasn't working. So I would just spend as much time with the people that I did connect really well to in the meetings. Cause just cause people are in the, any, you know, it, meeting room doesn't mean that I want their kind of recovery. I connected with people who I thought, okay, that's what I want.
Did you have a hard time with the sort of God part of AA, being that you grew up religious, but you did not follow that religion?
I definitely did. I had a hard time with conception of God, especially in the book. It says God and it says he, and you know, I really do not, I still don't connect to that concept. But when, if I really listened and I listened to the people there, it really is about a connection to a God of your understanding. And for me, it was being out in nature and the universe, you know, like the creator's concept was much more, I could connect to that because I wasn't totally against any kind of God. I just, the proverbial white guy with a beard, that definitely wasn't my thing. And when I first started in AA, I actually went through the book and changed everywhere where it said God or him. I put they, because I thought I need a team of beings to help me with this. And, you know, with AA too, especially the longer it's been, I really, AA is an excellent program and it got me sober. And I really, still, if that works for people, that's great. And it still does work for me. And there are, you know, the book is quite old, so it's sexist and it's not it's not as inclusive as it could be. Like I have to do the work to make myself feel included, which there's probably arguments for both sides, and the programs work. So I know they don't want to change anything too quickly or rashly. There's a lot of things that could get in the way, I think, because I've been sober now for over 20 years. I can't believe that I was able to function with that level, like that it didn't immobilize me. And I think at times it did. And I think that's what alcohol did for me, is that it kept me moving really, and not just completely immobilized in fear and shame and guilt. So it's more of a general, like an overall sense of peace and ease that I have now that I wouldn't give up.
If you could describe a day from waking up to going to bed when you were in active addiction, what would that day look like?
So if I had been drinking the night before, I would generally wake up and think, like, because it was almost, well, very often blackout drunk when I did drink. So it would be like, what did I do? Where was I? Did I drive? What did I say? You know, just those kinds of things. And if I had done and said things to people that I shouldn't have, I would like either cut those people out of my life or avoid seeing them or talking to them for quite a while. I would usually be pretty sick. So if I was at work, I, you know, wouldn't go to work. Or if I did go to work, then I would barely be able to function while at work. I remember near the end, I would think about like, how much alcohol do I have at home? If I'm at work, do I need somebody to go pick some up for me? And I remember on my days off, I would be like so excited that I didn't have to go anywhere or do anything. And I could just sit home and drink. And my, you know, it had moved from going out and partying and having fun. Not that I wouldn't do it, I would, but I much preferred to be at home because then I wouldn't drive anywhere, hopefully wouldn't interact with too many people. And I had a roommate and she came home one day with her, I was meeting her sister for the first time, and she came in and I remember I couldn't walk down the hallway. I was like bouncing off the walls, and she said, and she liked to drink too. And she said to me like, wow, I was not expecting this, and you know, on a Sunday afternoon or whatever day it was. I just remember those days of like, yes, I can just sit and do this and not have to worry about anything else. Yeah.
And you were bartending a lot at this time?
Yeah, I bartended. It's interesting. When I drank and bartended, I never actually drank at work, would work and go home. It wasn't every night. It was only once or twice a week. And then after I sobered up, I continued to bartend because it was a good source of income for me. It was interesting because in AA, especially, people were like, how can you do that? And I'm not sure, really. I would see people come in and I would watch them change over the course of the evening. And I could just see like how that's not what I wanted to do or be like that anymore.
Who is the person that's helped you most in recovery?
There's a couple, a man and woman who I've known since I first got sober. They're the ones I connected to. He was the secretary in the group that I went to. And I remember I went to him and told him my sober date. And he and his wife just essentially adopted me into their family. And I spent so much time with them. I still talk to them regularly. They're in Ontario and she's an Al-Anon member. Al-Anon is for people who have loved ones or family members who are in active addiction, and just to help navigate that. So to have their support and connection has kept me alive and sober, definitely. And then there's lots of other people and resources along the way that have supported, depending on what I needed in those moments and what areas of growth I was working on, that I've been able to connect to and feel really blessed to have been able to access and engage in counseling or, you know, coaching support or books or, you know, there's lots and lots of resources out there now, that's for sure.
Have you lost anyone close to you to addiction?
Yes. And I remember the first time it happened after getting sober, and this young man had tried AA and tried to get sober. And I remember him saying to me, I just can't get, like, the big book wasn't for him. And I can't get past the God thing. And I just remember how sad I was. It's such a real struggle and battle for so many. There's no one way that is right or, you know, to get sober. And I just remember wishing that he could have done that. And yeah, but he couldn't. And there's been, you know, there's been many since then. And just to watch the pain and suffering is really, really hard.
If you could describe yourself in active addiction in 3 words, and then describe yourself today in 3 words, what would they be?
That's a good one. So in active addiction, shame, lying, and sick. And in now, connected, love, and joy with my partner now it's incredibly strong and healthy. And the job that I do is I get to connect with youth all day and to see their spirit and like just that to be able to see myself and others thrive. So such a gift.
Do you notice working with youth a difference in drinking and drugs from when you were young? Do you feel like it's as prevalent right now?
It's definitely prevalent. I think that addiction, there's even more opportunities for things to be addicted to, mm-hmm. like technology and social media and that sort of thing. I think that our youth are showing us that we need to find a better way to show them and ourselves how to be healthy, regulated, connected. That the world is not easy to navigate. I can't even imagine being a youth in today's world. So I think our job is to find ways to support them better. And I think addiction is our way to cope with pain and life and like so many things underlying. And I think one of the things that we need to talk openly about to youth is it's a strategy. It's not a healthy one and it's going to cause a lot more pain, but it's a strategy for underlying pain. So let's don't feel like so they don't feel shame about that, that it's not that there's something wrong with them. They are just trying to survive. Right. So that's, we need to help get what's causing that. What's the underlying cause of that? That addiction is a normal way to just try and make it through the day and not feel so much deep pain. Mm-hmm. So let's help with the pain instead.
What does a typical day look like for you now in sobriety?
I get up really early because I've got a lot to do. And sometimes I laugh with my friends and say, you know, the time I get up used to be the time that I would get home. Yeah, I get up and I have a real practice of connecting spiritually, like meditating and yoga and getting outside, and so that I'm primed for my day in a good way, like that I've filled my bucket before I even interact with anybody else. And then I get to connect with all these beautiful little spirits in my school and the people that I work with. I get outside a lot, whether it's with the kids and then after school, and my evenings are nice and quiet. Beaver Creek is pretty quiet, which I really like, and go to bed early. Yeah, like it's not an easy life, but it's a simple life, which I have this like deep felt sense of joy and ease. It's not always like that. There's definitely some very hard days or hard things, and I can feel restless, irritable, and discontent at a moment's notice. But even when I feel that, I know that I'll be able to work through that. I feel like it's going to crush me or end me like it used to.
Do you have any tips or tricks or books to share with others that are trying to get sober?
I would say that talking to somebody for sure is huge. Someone you know, like just exactly what you did, someone who you know has done it. I really like, for someone first thinking about addiction, Russell Brand's book, Recovery. It's kind of like an irreverent take on the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I really like that. I appreciate that. And there's all kinds of really great books about how addiction stems from trauma, and trauma is held in the body. So Bessel van der Kolk's book, The Body Keeps Score, any of Gabor Mate's books are really good about addiction. And yeah, I mean, there's lots out there. Look for something that you connect to. That's what matters. If you will read it, if you're not going to read it, then it's not going to help. Or if you're not going to talk to that person, it's not going to help. So whatever is working for you, and it'll lead, and to be open to lead you down a path of other things that may happen.
And what is the number one thing you are most grateful for in your sobriety?
I'm grateful for my ability to be compassionate with myself, because then I can do it with others, but it has to be me first. I had to learn it to do it with myself first. And with that compassion comes deep connection and love, which is the point of all of this, I think, with these, our lives.
Well, thank you so much for being here today, Heidi. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, Capri.
Take care.
Bye.
Thank you for listening. If you or someone you know is struggling with addiction, you can get help by calling the Yukon Government Mental Wellness and Substance Use Services at 1-866-456-3838, or by reaching out to Theki Anate Fly Like an Eagle program at 867-333-2497. If you would like to share your story on this podcast, please email recoverystoriesyukon@gmail.com.